Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 9 of Marketing Elements Podcast. On today's podcast, we have Stephen Woods, who wrote Digital Body Language, who's done a really good book on business-to-business marketing. So I haven't done a lot on the podcast, so it's really great to get someone with B2B experience on here. And I met Stephen last month at the Integrated Marketing Summit here in Atlanta. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Like I said, I'm really excited about business to business because I don't have it on here that often, and that's not my background, but it's very interesting. And I read your book, like I said, on jury duty when I finished it up, and it's really good, and I'm glad I got you on here. So if you can, tell a little bit about your book to people who may not know about it in our audience, what it's about, and why you wrote it.
Sure thing. So the idea behind digital body language is looking at the transition in buyers. If you look prior to the internet, when buyers had to get their information by interacting with the seller, you had to call in the sales, you had to engage in a conversation to learn a little bit about them. The seller was able, in this case, the salesperson, was able to see who was interested. In that conversation, you were in the room and you could see as a salesperson who was interested, who was not, just by reading their body language. Fast forward 10 years. And what we've got as a transition is buyers are now able to get all of their information online through your website, your competitors' websites, industry websites, social media. You can get all that information online. You don't need the salesperson to provide that information to you. And because of that, that salesperson is not able to understand the body language because they're not in the room. So that task of understanding which potential buyers are interested, what they're interested in, and what conversations they might partake in, that task now falls to the marketing team, who has to look at online behavior, what we're calling the digital body language, and use that digital body language to understand who needs to talk to sales and who needs to be nurtured further until they're ready.
Cool, yeah. And when you wrote that in the book, it was real interesting to come up which leads are sales, which one are sales and which one are marketing leads. I thought that was really interesting. And how do you, on a brief synopsis, how do you determine who's good to go on to the sales cycle and who's not? What are some things that people should be looking for in their digital body language?
Sure. So really, that often comes down to, just to simplify, two dimensions. You've got to understand who the individuals are who are likely to be able to buy what it is that you're selling, to buy your solutions. That comes down to what we call fit. Are they the right executives with the right level of seniority in the right industries and companies with the right revenue size? Fit is a static definition. It doesn't really change that quickly over time. But more interestingly is the level of interest that person has, what we call engagement. Are they on your website? Are they doing the right searches on Google that would indicate interest? Are they looking at case studies or technical specifications or your white papers? Are they doing the right activities that would tell you that they're engaged and interested and ready to talk about purchasing what it is that your company's offering? So if you see a high level of fit and a high level of engagement, that usually indicates that that person is someone you should get out in front of the sales team to start into a conversation about a purchase transaction.
Very cool. Yeah, because I think that's when I talk to a lot of business-to-business people, they are always wondering what's going on with the marketing department, how they can actually get in there and get good leads and go from there. So I think lead generation is the biggest problem for the sales teams right now.
It is. Often you have that disconnect between marketing and sales, sort of the classic back and forth where marketing says, hey, I sent you 1,000 leads last month, sales team, what happened to them? And sales says, yeah, you sent over a fishbowl of business cards. I tried calling a few of them. They weren't any good. What you're looking at there, and there's a number of studies from Serious Decisions and other analyst firms that have backed this up. What you see there is often that, not that those leads were bad. In fact, 70% of the leads that are passed over will end up purchasing at some point from someone in the industry, maybe from you, maybe from your competitors. What's missing when marketing sends over that fishbowl of business cards is the timing element. Is that person actively looking right now, or is it just that they're the right executive and may at some point prioritize dealing with the pain that you solve as a business? It's that timing element, and that's really encapsulated in that engagement idea.
Okay.
It's that timing element that really determines whether they're ready now to have that conversation.
Yeah, when I've gone dealt with business to business, that's just the main thing is sales and marketing are always back and forth about leads, who should get them, when they should get them, what's qualified, what's not, and how to redefine it. And I like your analysis that you go through, you set up what are your key factors you're looking for, whether it's the white papers, whether it's engagement, what it is, and then you keep redefining what it is a lead is, and you keep going back and determine, all right, who bought my product, and then what did they do, and then keep going forward, keep benchmarking against those, and redefine your leads and come up with the best leads possible. So I thought that
absolutely, yeah. It's an iterative cycle. You need to engage the sales team. You need to interact with the sales team and get an agreement between marketing and sales on what, just at first blush, what should a lead look like, mm-hmm. and then let the data speak. What out of that, how do we do? Let it run for 6 weeks or a quarter, and then look at it and say, okay, did those leads engage? When we said that it was a marketing qualified lead, was sales able to start the conversation? Were they able to turn it into a sales qualified opportunity? Did it actually end up closing if you look maybe sort of a few months down the road? And then based on that data, go all the way back to that original definition and say, okay, what did we learn? Maybe we need to increase how much we prioritize search terms that they're using, decrease how much we prioritize the activity on the product pages on the website. Whatever you learn, you can start to bake that into your scoring algorithms.
Definitely. Yeah, because I thought that was something really good that I don't think a lot of people do right now. I think it's more get the leads, pass them on. They don't go back and benchmark and see what has determined really good leads. So that's something that's really cool, I thought. Also, what are some, outside of the book, what are some big things you're seeing companies do that, you know, they can improve on in lead generation? What's some things you've been seeing in the industry that you think a lot of people do this and it's probably not working good for them? Is there anything you're really seeing right now?
Yeah, I think one of the things that that the best marketers are doing really, and there's an opportunity for everyone to sort of watch and learn from, is thinking about the cost of a communication outside of just the pure dollar cost. If you look at a lot of the digital communication that we've got out there, if I take email as an example, not that expensive to send an email. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, for sake of argument, it's virtually free. But what you find as a B2B organization is if you send an email and that email is not well targeted, it's not relevant content, it's not interesting, there's a significant cost to that because it drives that recipient away from you and away from your brand. It causes them to disengage. And very quickly, if you send someone 5, 6, 10 unrelevant emails, they do what we call emotionally unsubscribing. And, yeah. And to explain what this is, just I'll use the concept of you in your own inbox. There's a lot of emails that you get on a basis where maybe you even signed up for them a long time ago. You recognize them and immediately, reflexively ignore them or delete them. Mm-hmm. You haven't gone in and actually physically clicked the unsubscribe link because that's a lot of effort and there's all sorts of problems with that. You just unsubscribe. You recognize it and immediately, yeah. Well, that marketer has lost you. They've pushed you away to the point that you're not interested in even engaging to see if there's anything interesting in that content. So the best are realizing that there is a substantial cost to sending out any irrelevant messages. And they really focus their efforts around minimizing that cost by precisely targeting based on displays of interest each individual with something, with a message that will be used to that person, because they want to avoid having people emotionally unsubscribe from their communication.
Yeah, I even do that now when you mention it. There are certain companies that you buy from and then you see them in the email box, you're just like, okay, skip over them. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You recognize it and you don't even look.
So, yeah, I think that's really important that even in consumer, I've noticed if the message isn't relevant, people just really don't pay attention to it. And if you spend too many emails, that's worse than not sending enough. Because I know several companies where they send emails every other day and you're like, oh, please stop sending emails. But it's just a pain to go unsubscribe.
Relevance is the number one driver of any form of response. And if you look at what drives relevance, it's interest. And interest is really a psychographic factor. It's not you can't look at demographics or firmographics and say, ah, well, I'm talking with Tim, who happens to be in a consumer packaged goods company, therefore he'll be interested in this particular piece of content. Not relevant. You've got to look at what you've displayed in terms of interest. Have you been, let's say I'm selling security software, have you shown any form of interest in security or any of the corollaries to that? If you have, you might be interested in the message. If you're not, the demographics or the firmographics of who you are or what company you work for aren't really going to guide you that way.
Yeah, definitely. So one other thing you mentioned, I remember in the book, is how the email messaging also ties into people who may have been interested and who sort of fallen through the cracks, and now you can get them back with email messages if you just keep in touch with them. Because maybe they weren't interested, maybe they weren't ready to buy, maybe they ruled other people out. I thought that was a really good thing to do as well. It's like, don't just because someone's not a good lead right now doesn't mean that you just abandon them and don't forget about them. So,
absolutely. If you look at purchase cycles for most business-to-business solutions, it might be something that you look at maybe once in 3 years. Mm-hmm. If you've either, it's not a project that's top of the agenda, or it's something that you've already put a solution in place for, you're not going to be purchasing that item for another 3 years. So what you need to do, if you're a business that's trying to sell that solution, what you need to do is identify when the buyer is actively interested in your solution category. And if they're not, then nurture them until that business change happens such that they are interested. And nurturing is interesting because you'll see a lot of poor uses of nurturing where basically it's just a sequence of buy now emails every 30 days. Well, that doesn't work. What you've got to do is, and I always describe the goal of lead nurturing being maintaining permission to stay in front of that individual, sending them stuff that is truly valuable, whether it is events that are coming up, whether it is tickets to shows in their area that are on the topic, if there's a big security convention in town, or if you're selling financial management software, if there's a conference on that's happening, getting them involved, getting them engaged, not trying to sell to them until they're ready to buy. Yeah. And if you do that, you can maintain permission to stay in front of them such that a few years later, when the buying opportunity does surface, you're still in contact with them and they have not emotionally unsubscribed.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I know when I've dealt with people like that, if they're constantly in touch with me, it's like, hey, just checking in, here's something you may find interesting, is a lot better than we're having to sell by now. We're back. We had a little bit of technical difficulty there. So we've had a couple of them today. Gotta love technology at times, people. But we're talking about staying in touch with people and keeping you top of mind. So, but yeah, I think that's something that's really important that a lot of companies don't really do, because I don't know if they don't see the value in it or they just don't have the time to do it. So, I think there's
it is. It's one of those things where putting the effort into stay in contact over a period of time to nurture buyers who are not ready to buy. The challenge really comes down to you've got to look at it from a longer term time horizon. I mean, by definition, you're targeting buyers who are not ready to buy today. So looking at it and measuring it in terms of, okay, well, how many leads did this campaign generate today is the wrong math. That's going to not tell you that, that the campaign was highly successful. What you've got to do is build a nurturing campaign and look at it over a period of 9 to 12 months, and what you'll see there is you'll see hundreds, if not thousands, of leads coming out of this nurturing campaign slowly. It's like growing a garden. You see the fruits of your labors over time as those businesses have internal events that drive purchasing interest.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of companies, too, need to look at their selling cycle, because some things aren't bought very often. And you need to take that into consideration also. You may not get a ton of leads from it, because you mainly need to buy your service once a decade, as opposed to consumers who buy stuff every week. So I think that's another thing to look into, that some companies don't, they want leads, they want to get everything, but, you know, your product is not really bought every week, every month, every year. So I think that's something important to look at as well.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of marketers really would benefit from taking a step back and looking at things from the buyer's perspective, with a very open mindset to, you know, is that buyer actually going to be interested in what I'm selling right now? Because chances are, like you say, for many business-to-business consideration categories, purchase items, they might not have a driving event that causes them to need that item at that moment in time.
Definitely.
So you've got to be there when they are ready, but not try and force the issue too soon.
Definitely. Yeah, because consumers, you constantly need to be in front of their face because they're always buying. But businesses, I think that's the big misconception a lot of people have is, oh, you can do it all the time. And I'm like, well, not really. You got to see where they are, and they may not need it. But if you do, like you say, with the go on, have a relationship with them, that'll keep you in mind when they do come up to that. So we're about coming up on time, but could you give like some top, like couple examples of what companies should be doing right now to make sure their leads and their marketing to other businesses can be successful?
Sure. So step one, I would say, is map out the buying process. Go through and get an understanding of exactly how buyers buy. A good example of this is Jeff Hartley, who was the head of marketing at Terracotta a few years ago now. Sorry, he still is. But a few years ago, he mapped out his buying process, and Terracotta sells open source software for performance optimization. And what Jeff realized was that those buyers went through a cycle: recognition, evaluation, sampling, integrating the software, testing it, and deploying it. And by recognizing that, he was then able to decipher exactly what online behavior would indicate a buyer is at what stage. What indicates that they're at the recognition stage? What indicates that they're at the evaluation or the sampling stage? And by doing that, he was then able to bucket all of his buying audience into these categories. And from there, not only could he get his sales team to focus on the people who are actually ready to buy, but he could keep his marketing efforts focused on the messaging that would make the most sense for buyers. If you're at the recognition phase, high-level thought leadership, if you're at the sampling or the integration stage, well, then you need a little bit more detailed and tactical and technical messaging. So the first step that I advise every marketer to go through is an exercise to determine how your buyers actually learn about you, become educated, and go through a purchase process.
Cool. Very cool. And what's probably the top thing businesses should not do right now? What's the biggest thing you're seeing, mistakes that you're seeing made in business-to-business marketing?
I think the biggest mistake that's being made there is thinking about the definition of a buyer from the perspective of the data that we have on them. The company information, the firmographics, the individual information, the demographics, if you will. What governs a buying process is 99% what's happening inside in that business. You can't tell whether the board of directors has just gotten very upset about a particular issue just by looking at the fact that somebody has a director of IT title. You don't know. What you've got to look at to determine that current level of interest is the activity and the online behavior, not the demographics and the firmographics. And I think there's still a mindset of looking at that data because it's always been data that we've had, whereas the activity and the online behavior is very new to business-to-business marketers.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's very important for people. And I think everyone, especially in business-to-business, should read this book. It is probably one of the best ones I've read in a long time. And if you can tell people, where can they find your book at?
Well, it's available on Amazon, or I have a blog that talks about it and has a number of the thought pieces out of the book that's at digitalbodylanguage.blogspot.com.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank you today for coming on the podcast and sharing some business-to-business information and some awareness.
My pleasure. It's good to be here. Thank you, Tim.
And we'll have another podcast out to you very soon, and have a good week. Thank you for listening to Marketing Elements Podcast. You can reach me at tim@marketingelementsblog.com. You can find us on the web at marketingelementsblog.com. Look for us on Facebook or find us on Ning. It's marketingelements.ning.com. Thanks again, and we'll have another podcast out to you very soon.